started. We got everyone here. So just want to welcome everyone out to our first workshop of the year. There's going to be three other ones. The next one's going to be May 26th. About 5. Okay. It's going to be focused around housing at that time. Then we have we always have a budget workshop, but that's going to be on July 8th. July 7th, at 8:30. July 7th, that's where we're going over our budget workshop. And then we have dog-eared for September 14th at 5 o'clock again for our last one as well, I believe. So.
I've got it on the slideshow. I know you just looked it up earlier today. But we've got a second community meeting in September again. No, first one in September because of the way that Mondays fall. So September 14th.
And so just to revisit a couple items, so this workshop, we're not seeking any information from the public or will any public member be speaking during this meeting. This is just a way for us to talk about ideas. Today we're going to be focusing on strategic plans and initiatives. It's really more strategic initiatives for this year. Any other topics that don't really fit in that criteria, I'm going to basically cap those off. We're going to follow this pretty closely. Bill's going to be giving that presentation. We can talk and go along those things. Anything I think is getting out of that purview, I'll be focusing our attentions on that. And so with that, Bill.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. I always like to have an opportunity to talk in the spring. It's kind of part of our strategic planning cycle, just to touch base every spring as we head into the budget cycle to talk about kind of how we progress on our identified strategic initiatives, and then kind of what's our look at the tea leaves and forecast for the fiscal year. Is there anything that the council wants us to be looking at as we start working on development of the 27th budget, which we just recently started on? So kind of go through that.
Can I just
this year.
Really quick on that? Because I have to go so soon, and it goes right along these lines. Okay.
Yep.
With all of the new developments in the world and all the prices going up, how confident are we that what we're planning right now and what we can afford is something that we can afford in 6 to 8 months? Do you have any feel for that?
6 to 8 months, we've seen inflation increase recently. But you just talk about existing budget expenditures for this fiscal year?
Well, I'm just talking about how the recent developments in the world and how things are going up.
It's kind of hard to know.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how long the conflict remains, how oil, that's been kind of up and down. Obviously, that bleeds its way through everything. Inflation's been still continued to be a little bit sticky, although it's subsiding a little bit. Construction costs, you saw in bid results, are coming in better. So it's going to be kind of a mixed bag.
Okay. Thanks.
And one of the things I really want to go over today is kind of the process by which we identify the kind of 13 identified strategic initiatives. That's something we'd be going through this fall and make sure that the council feels comfortable with that process, since that's really kind of one of the primary goals today. So, again, strategic planning is, it's our way to formalize our community goals and objectives and align our efforts, and I underline our finite resources because they are limited. Towards achieving those outcomes. And we really do need to be focused on a fairly limited number of items. If we try to do too many of these, we just don't have the financial resources to accomplish. So it's really, but it is our opportunity to kind of give a real focus on these are, we think, are our most important issues we need to be addressing here. It is a continuing, ongoing process, so we have annual conversations, at least once, if not twice a year, on this topic, because it often takes us a number of years to get things done. Either, again, due to funding constraints, due to grant cycles, due to staff resources, it's not like we can very often snap our fingers to get something done. So it does take time to get these completed. It's kind of why we have this four-year cycle, because it's pretty common that it takes us, 4 or 5 years to get something accomplished. The emergency radio project's been on the radar for 10 years, and we're finally getting it taken care of. The city shop's been on the radar as well for 10 years, and we're finally getting that taken care of. So it does take us a lot of time to accumulate the funds if necessary, obtain the grant funds if that's an opportunity to get these things completed. So it's important for us to have kind of this long-term focus. The council, historically, in the past, prior to 2015, there was kind of an annual goal-setting session, and it'd be 30 things on the list, and we get two or three completed, and the next year it gets wiped clean, and it gets thrown up again. That is doesn't really work well for how we function. It takes a lot of time and focus for us to allocate our resources and try to get things taken care of. So that's really kind of our focus here. It is a four-year planning cycle. Typically, every year, it's the way we kind of set it up last time is we would establish the strategic initiatives in the fall following the mayoral election. That kind of gives us that time period of having, again, gives most of a year for a council mayor to get, you know, that are maybe newly elected to kind of get a sense of the operations. And then it gives us kind of that 3 years of consistency. You know, council is going to turn over every 2 years. Half the council may turn over. But at least we'll have that mayoral leadership during the time period. And then after that next mayoral election, then we would do it again in that fall. We would have annual spring reports, which is kind of what today is about. And if there's anything that's popped up that's a new emergency that we weren't aware of at the time, we set that, we can certainly evaluate whether that needs to be inserted in the plan, what priority that needs to take. But really trying to kind of provide that consistency in leadership. So one of the things I did talk about is I just want to make sure that we review the process that we did last time because it's really going to set the stage for work we'll be doing later this year. So really, the goal today is just to review our progress towards existing strategic initiatives, to review the process we previously utilized to identify, evaluate, score, and rank initiatives, and then to spend a little bit of time discussing FY27 budget priorities. I will say there's not going to be a lot of money, so that, you know, there won't be a lot of maneuvering, but I want to provide an opportunity to have a conversation before we start getting that budget on paper, that council can let us know if there are any things we need to be looking at. And then just kind of begin thinking about the 26 update this fall to the strategic plan, and really making sure that when we're thinking about things to add to that list, that it's within the city's mission. It's our primary responsibility to do, that it's something that is specific, measurable, achievable, and realistic. There are some things that are just going to be, yes, we'd like to change the world in this way, but it's outside of our sphere of influence or something we can accomplish. So it's important to make sure we stay within that. So we typically start with the city's mission statement, which is to deliver quality municipal services while ensuring responsible use of resources. We anticipate to meet the needs of our diverse population in order to build public trust and enhance the sense of community. And so that should be guiding everything that we do. I won't go through the details. You know, I think everybody's probably pretty familiar with the strategic planning cycle, establishing goals, identifying desired outcomes, developing strategies, measuring the results and targets, seeing the results, and then it's a continuing, ongoing process. But at the center of the circle is our mission. And so it's really important to focus on, especially an organization with limited resources, our core purpose of being here, what's our core services. So again, I kind of already kind of highlighted this, but again, we work on updating, revising the plan every 4 years and following the mayor election. We do annual reporting each spring prior to budget development, and that also provides an opportunity to add anything that has come up that wasn't available at the time it was identified. If new issues are developed, then we can rank them in priority in the next year's report session, or if it's an unforeseen emergency, obviously we can adjust it at that point in time. So last time we did this, we asked the council, mayor, and the executive management team, which is myself and the two deputies, to each submit up to 3 strategic issues for consideration. So if there are 3 things you think that we really need to be focusing on, you have an opportunity to submit 3. And so we ended up with about 13 in total last time because we had some duplicates.
When was last time?
That would have been fall 2022.
Yeah.
And so it gives that opportunity for to submit 3 things so we can keep the number manageable and that we can keep everybody's focus on what are the kind of the 3 most critical things facing the community that we think we need to make improvements on. We then prepared a scoring and ranking matrix for the council, mayor, executive management team to score each issue statement. And I'll kind of walk through those. And then we held a council workshop to review how that all shook out. So that's what we would be planning for September, would be to kind of do a review. So we'll kind of have the process to submit, and then we will typically with the digital scoring mechanism, we just kind of create a Survey Monkey where you can kind of score, and that'll give us all the metrics we need. And then we'll have a session to sit down with council and say, okay, these are the items we received, these are how it was scored, how do you feel about this, do you think we need to modify, you know, are we feeling comfortable with how this is shaping up? And then the mayor and council then work to rank them, and typically just follows the metrics, the numeric scores, but certainly. Decide that, you know, even though this one's scored lower, we all think this is the highest priority. You got that prerogative to move it up. So this is just kind of a sample form that we utilize, just kind of one sample. So you've got an issue statement description in the top box, and then question of, does the city have primary responsibility for this issue? Is this really our thing, or should it be somebody else? Because we have to ask ourselves that, because of our limited resources and staff, we have to be focusing on our core key responsibilities. I know there's a lot of things we'd like to change in the world, or we'd like to see change in the world, but we have to make sure that it's within our, our area of responsibility. And then there's questions about impact assessment. So what's the impact and magnitude? How significant is the damage we cause if this is not addressed? Or how pervasive is the issue? What's the duration and frequency? Is this something that happens all the time? Is it just a one-time situation? How urgent is it? Is it controllable? And then how does it impact community legacy? And kind of, it's just your opportunity to pitch your issue. If you think this is something that's really important and critical, this is your opportunity to share that with the council to identify why you think this is something the city should be really focusing on and allocating both staff and financial resources for. So we had 13 items that were identified last time. This is not how they were ranked, but we had city shop facility, we had emergency radio system, fire and EMS staffing, affordable housing, staff recruitment, urban forests, alternative water supply, inadequate funding for to maintain streets, multimodal transportation connectivity, economic development, playfield rehabilitation development, city gateway aesthetics, and then interior and downtown streetscape and infrastructure were the 13 items identified last time. So we go through a score based on impact and magnitude. How pervasive is it? Is this a short-term issue that will pass, or is this going to continue to persist? How urgent can it be delayed or deferred, or must this be addressed right now? Is this something that we have can have a meaningful impact on? What's the controllability? There are some things such like affordable housing that can be tough to understand what kind of impact that they have on that issue. And then how does it affect the vision for the future of the community?
So with controllability, you're also wrapping available money into that.
Yeah.
It would fit into five pretty much.
Yeah. And so we just kind of have a survey monkey. All the items are listed there. And so each of the categories, the council had a chance to go through and score. Out of that came kind of numeric scores. And the green are really the top three in each of the evaluation criteria. But some are tied. So you'll see four in a few of them because we had some high scores on a couple of items. But you kind of see that kind of floats up and kind of creates the ranking, and those that were in that top three band were kind of really those that were viewed both on most all of the criteria as having the highest importance. So alternative water supply, fire and EMS staffing, emergency communication, city shop kind of ended up being those top four issues.
Real quick, on these results, just so I'm tracking correctly here, was this the executive team and mayor doing the ranking, or is this
council? Everybody.
Okay, this is
okay. Yeah, it's council, mayor, and executive.
Okay, I'm just trying to get a picture of how
all participating in the process. Yep.
Okay, great, thank you. And that's in 2022.
Great. And it's kind of, it may have flowed over in the spring of 2023, if I recall correctly. That ultimately kind of created that ranking of the 1 to 13, is based on how they were scored on the various criteria. So again, that's just kind of how they ranked out. So, any questions on the process before we kind of go to the next reporting stage?
Drew, can I chime in on one thing really quick?
Sure.
We also, 2022 was when Bill took over as city administrator. 22. And there are places that do goal setting every single year in council. I am glad that we don't do goal setting every single year, because these are big things that set direction for a large moving organization. And so, and it's been 4 years since we've done it, but it also is because that's how long it takes for us to make verbal progress on these things as they filter up. So,
any questions on the process? We try to find something that was kind of easy, somewhat manageable, logical.
Yeah.
Not try to make it too complicated. And yeah, so. I just want to kind of make sure that you had a chance to review that. If there's any concerns, questions about it, let us know, because that way we can be working over the next couple of months, because I think we'll start kind of in July requesting the issue statements and scoring in August ahead of the September workshops that will be coming up. And I've got a slide talking about next steps, but if there's anything you'd like to change in the process, it's something that I would like to know so we can actually work on. But just that's how we did last time. It seemed to work reasonably well with the council last time we heard about it. So,
I just have a question. Are all the submissions and issue statements available to public, or how?
Yep, so we share all this to you, so you can see all of them. You can see how people argue for their particular issues. I mean, mostly were pretty well understood. You know, there were some that were new, like connectivity was a little bit one that was a little bit more obscure. But things like water, you know, fire EMS service, city shop, roadway maintenance, those were all pretty well understood. There wasn't really any debate on any of those. But yeah, so you'll get, so what will happen is we'll get them all, we'll compile, we'll give you all of those forms, and then give you the scoring sheet for you to go through, or the survey to go through and do the evaluation.
Was the scoring like how important, or was it just like is yes or no? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, so it's on the scale, so it's significant, so like it impact magnitude, how significant is the damage if not addressed, so it's significant, moderate, and so it just was on a 5-point scale. That's hard to read that.
Okay.
Yes. So it was on like a 5-point scale,
okay,
relative importance.
Okay.
And so, you know, it gives you an opportunity to kind of do comparative shopping with others on the list, right? Mm-hmm. You go through and start kind of going down and kind of gives you that opportunity to compare the different issues and kind of evaluate what you think the relative impact or magnitude of that issue is.
Okay,
so now we have to kind of report on progress of the existing items. So, you know, first being action on alternative water supply, and so that's a significant one. So, again, in 2023, we kind of shifted to looking at SNAPE. That's an incomplete sentence. Shifted because you may recall late 22 at the water summit, it was Paradise Creek and South Fork Blue River were going to be the source. Kind of work through a pivot of we didn't think, given potential climate variability, water quality, treatability, that we needed to shift to looking at the SNAPE for Clearwater. Kind of made that pivot then in 2024, added a water resource board through conversations with our staff and our water resource board. We were able to secure $182,000 in grant funds to facilitate additional study. We issued that RFQ for a consultant to do that study in 2024. We executed a contract in 25 of HDR. Study has been initiated, and we are on schedule to complete that assessment by the end of this year. So it's kind of, and that's really that first step, is initial test of feasibility, test of environmental obstacles, regulatory obstacles, available water right, and preliminary construction costs to really prove a concept of being bringing water up from the Clearwater. So that's a huge milestone on this particular item. This will be a decades long issue, right? And there are some, this is a longer time scale that I really like to see on there, but it is of such importance to the community and to the region that it's something I think we have to keep on our list. But it's not going to be one we're going to check off in a year or two. It's going to be one that's going to be a continued effort and focus for at least a decade or more. So
that said, we don't need to add this onto what we're saying. Hey, we'd like to focus on this.
Well, you're going to have the opportunity. Well, so essentially, the slate's going to be wiped clean, and if you want to retain, I think the principle would be to resubmit that item. Because I don't want to, you know, keep this list and just keep making it longer and longer. If it's going to be, you know, there are 10, so there could be 30 additional new items added to the list. I think we can't manage that many items. And so I think the intent here is you're starting fresh, right? You're not bound by the past. You're informed by the past. There's going to be some things that we'll be able to check off as being completed before you get to this. You know, the shop will be done. I think things like shop's going to be done, emergency barriers will be done. I think we can declare completion. This one, I think, recommend that it stay on the list. But I think the easiest way for us to do this is to just wipe it clean. Mm-hmm. So make good progress on that. Fire EMS medical services, in 2023, we started with a funding holiday stipend coverage to cover when our student residents would go home during the holiday periods. In 2024, we entered into a joint agreement with the volunteers in the city to fund the 3 paramedic firefighter positions to make sure that we had that 24/7 paramedic coverage. Again, the volunteers covering 100% first 3 years, and then we come in at 5% per year up to an 80-20 split between the volunteers and the city. In 2024, we added two additional positions to the resident program, growing it to 24 members, and then currently we are working on the EMS study to also look at are there other ways to help stabilize the EMS service, because you know, we are on this kind of delicate three-legged stool of volunteers, student residents, and a few paid staff members to try to run this operation at about $1.9 million, where it would traditionally cost us $7 to $8 million to run a fully paid fire department. So it's our goal to keep this three-legged stool operational. And we've made good strides in stabilizing EMS service and getting coverage during those winter breaks. And this last summer, we actually had stipends during the summer months to keep one engine fully staffed at all times as well. And then we're also looking at expanding sleeping quarters, because there was a study done, I think it was 2016, to look at adding additional sleeping quarters to Station 2. Because we really feel that we need to kind of continue to nurture, grow, and expand the student resident program, because it is the way for us to maintain this delicate balance long term as the community grows.
And this is all funded through general fund?
Yes. Yeah, everything fire related is general fund. And the volunteers themselves are a separate 501c3 nonprofit entity. They do billings for the transport, the ambulance transports. It's kind of a unique situation where the volunteers actually own the ambulance, they own the fire apparatus, they hold a medical license, they do the billing for transport, so they generate between $500,000 and $600,000 a year in billing for medical services they provide. And then we just kind of work jointly together to make sure that that service is delivered to the community.
And the community fundraising for that has kind of flatlined the last 5 years, hasn't it?
They're about $90,000 to $100,000 right. They collect per year, but that's been pretty set. It hasn't really grown much. They had one year where they kind of fell off. But it's been about that $90,000.
We might have to look for some growth.
Yeah. Fundraising also doesn't fund ongoing expenses. Fundraising shouldn't be relied on for ongoing expenses.
So, substandard emergency communication system, again, started the design in 2022. In 2024, we awarded contracts to Motorola for the purchase of portable mobile radios and also to Raycom for the repeater installation. We received these radios, which were mounted and deployed last year. Repeaters are now completed, and we're into testing and commissioning. This should happen in April, May. So we should, by June, have the system fully up and operational. So that would be, we'll be able to check that one off our list. But again, this is kind of the timeline that it takes us, about that 4 to 5 year cycle. It's why we kind of want to try to hold for that 4 year time period, some consistent focus on what our major initiatives are. Age of City Shop, again, started 2022 to develop a conceptual design cost estimate. In 23, the council reallocated $3.6 million of ARPA funds to the City Shop project. We moved forward with the design in 2024. We awarded the contract for construction in late 24. Construction began in spring of 25, and construction is well underway. We'll have the new shop construction should be wrapping up about either end of June into early July. We'll get occupants out of existing into that temporarily, and then they'll remove siding and cladding of the existing shop, and then we have a tenant improvement remodel project that's budgeted this year for the interior of the existing shop to reconfigure that for street and storm to remain in the existing facility while fleet and parks will move into the new facility. But all of that work should be completed by the end of this year. And just a couple photographs again now that's our current status of construction from a few weeks ago. Inability to recruit sufficient staff to perform essential functions. We were having a hard time about 5 years ago on recruitment efforts. Police Department took some action in 2022 to create their cadet program in partnership with the University of Idaho to try to create a pipeline for new hires for patrol. We began working on salary surveys, did one in 2022. In the time period from 22 and 24, the council agreed to approve dependent insurance costs. It's kind of one of our impediments to hiring folks was the city was paying 50% of dependent health insurance premiums, and the standard for all of our surrounding peer cities was 80%. And so we've been moving at 5% per year. We're currently sitting at 65%, so we're covering 65% of dependent premiums. So that's been helpful because it's part of the total compensation. It's what we pay for compensation. It's what they're going to get deducted from the check for their benefits and health insurance. So that's been very helpful. We did another salary survey in 2024 and made some adjustments after that in 2025. I'm sorry, that should be 65, not 56%. We increased spend coverage to 65% that year, and we're preparing to complete another salary survey, so we're trying to do them every 2 years just to keep on pace, not, you know, not wait 5 years and have to do kind of large adjustments that we can't plan for. And I would say in recent recruitments, we've had much better applicant pools and many more applicants applying for positions. So definitely, you know, law enforcement is still the area that struggles a little bit. We are still substantially lower than Pullman, but we're never going to be able to pay at the same level Pullman does. We are competitive with our Idaho neighbors, with Lewiston, Coeur d'Alene, and the counties, but we're not going to be able to compete with Pullman. That's just something we're not going to do. And I think some of those are why they're having some of their financial challenges as well. Inadequate funding for, you know, to properly maintain our streets. This will be that kind of long-term issue as well. It's not unique to us. It's all cities in Idaho that struggle with trying to fund roadway improvements. Our focus is to provide additional capital allocation for street repair and restoration. Last year, we were able to invest $3 million, which was a pretty strong year. Include a number of projects, including White Avenue, Public Avenue, and 6.5 miles of slurry seals. So we had a pretty active year last year. This year will be a little bit lighter. You saw the Mountain View tap projects, so those will be this year. And then we also will have another round of service treatment, about $350,000 as well. And then we are working on some pedestrian ramp improvements on D Street and on Taylor, because those are scheduled for grinding in place next year in FY27. We just received word, we think we're on the short list to get awarded the D Street project. So it'll be granted inlay from 95 up to Hayes, so that'd be great. Anytime we do anything more than just a service treatment, we have to replace any non-compliant ADA ramps, so we're getting those done in advance this year on those two projects. And so we're hopeful those will be two large projects next year.
When do we find out for sure about D Street?
It should be the next 30 days. Yeah, we got the word. We think our tap is looks like it's going to be funded. So that was going to pick up Mountain View from White Avenue to Highway 8, yep. Do the pathway, the retaining wall. So we think that one's going to get funded. We submitted a second tap, which was the pathway expansion there on 6th Street by Schwartz Funeral Chapel. We probably won't. That's not going to get funded. They did not have enough money to fund more than one project for all the requesting entities. So we're just going to get one this year. But it looks like the South Mountain View one will be funded, and it looks like we're on the list for the urban for the D Street project. So those are both really great projects. I wish we weren't dependent upon grants all the time to get this done, but that's kind of what we have to do. Downtown streetscape improvements. Again, we did a kind of a downtown streetscape study in 2023. ultimately, kind of came up with an estimated project cost of $26 million for the council that were. Members of Ron Council at the time, that was right at the cusp of our kind of financial struggles with the case down in Lewiston and losing street funding, so that kind of placed on hold. We still have a desire, and we can't just neglect it forever, right? The hardscape, the crosswalks, the missing curbs, the deteriorating, cracking street, we're going to have to invest in downtown, but we're going to have to do it in small scale, targeted ways that we can afford, and in partnership with the Moscow Urban Renewal Agency, that could be another good, strong partner to get these improvements completed. So we're going to start prioritizing this year to identify that. And we have $250,000 in the budget for design work to start on looking at, you know, identifying where we would be focused first and kind of do incremental improvements throughout downtown. Urban forestry, again, we've worked on the development of downtown street plan. That's just will be coming to the council here in the next couple months. And we are working to identify additional resources. This was kind of a priority for Mayor Becky previously, so it's been something, but we just haven't had many resources to be able to put toward it. We did start focusing on downtown trees because kind of in concert with the downtown streetscape project is what are we going to do with the existing trees? There also were many of them planted around the same time, and so we don't, you know, we want to look at succession planning so we don't have, you know, them all coming at the end of life at a short period of time. So you'll see more details in that plan where we've identified, you know, vacant tree wells, trees in poor condition and kind of a recommendation to look at between 5 and 10 trees being replaced annually for the next, you know, 10, 15 years to kind of slowly work on transitioning and making sure we have a healthy street canopy downtown long term.
Can I offer some commentary real quick? So just for the you might be approached occasionally, and I know I have a handful of times, when people hear this out of the community, they get, I think, kind of spooked, or they have the propensity to get a little spooked, because they hear, like, downtown revitalization, or they hear, you know, changing things downtown. It sets off alarm bells, so I think it's part of our responsibility to communicate effectively how we are doing this incrementally and we're doing this very strategically. And I do know that people still have to have some residual, trauma is a strong word, but that's what I'm going to choose, from what happened in Pullman a couple of years ago. Even though that's not Moscow, that project was branded downtown revitalization, and it's stuck within the region. So I think people are a little on edge when they hear things like this. So
it's going to take streetscape improvements.
Right, exactly. So I'm just saying, like, that's where people sometimes come from when they're like, oh, because I had somebody stop me, and they're like, I heard you all are going to rip up downtown. And I was like, let's start again. What's that?
With what money?
And it's not the only time. I've had a handful of instances. So just making sure that we're communicating accurately with the trees and with all of the streetscape improvements in downtown. So,
well, and part of the issue that we talked to people, people have these concerns. Why Pullman is where they're at is because they delayed many things.
Sure.
So the more you delay, the worse it gets. So being proactive is never a benefit. You set out the funds to do it.
Lack of affordable housing, again, you know, over the last 10 years, we have done a number of regulatory changes, either, you know, to permit twin homes and townhouses in many zoning districts, reduce lot sizes, reduce setbacks, allow ADUs in all residential zoning districts, and allow residential development in all commercial zones. You know, we've been kind of chipping away at this for the last 10 years. We'll have a workshop coming up on May 26th just to continue the conversation, see if there's other things the city can consider looking at. But this is one of those that we don't have a really large lever to influence. Primarily, you know, if we look at our role, it's a regulatory role. So what can we do to reduce regulatory costs? That's always something we look at. And what can we do to expand regulatory opportunities for housing development? And as the council knows, there are several bills still working kind of their way through the legislature this year, and we'll see what makes it through that we'll have to react to as well. But it's one of those that it's a big problem. It's a nationwide problem. It's one that it's just with our resources, it's hard for us to have a substantial impact on. But certainly, I think regulatory is kind of no cost options of how we can try to help reduce barriers and burdens. And that's where we should always start first. And that's kind of how we influence that that market.
Multimodal transportation connectivity, you know, we had identified the South Main underpass as kind of the project that we were working towards, that goal. It's now been deemed infeasible, so now we're going to be focusing on those service improvements. We just had that conversation here a few months ago, so you're familiar with that. City Gateway Aesthetics, again, with some of those service improvements, we're looking at adding some of those amenities, like the brick furnishing zone, decorative light fixtures, street trees, just to kind of help improve that visual appearance, the removal of the old bridge as you come into South Main. So we got some little bit of funding for landscape design to go in concert with that project as well. For playfield rehabilitation and development, you know, we continue to work with the school district on looking at the West Blue River Drive property and whether that would be a suitable location for a joint development of a school and playfields to bring on additional playfields. We've also had discussions with the school district. They've expressed a desire to add field lighting to the Joseph Street facility. That would expand hours of operation, so it's another way of getting fields without building additional fields. It is a substantial cost. You know, it's a couple $1 million to light that facility, so it's not an inconsequential cost. I'm guessing that we'll continue that conversation with the district this summer and see if that's something that the two entities want to pursue.
Yeah, and this is, like we said, this is a conversation that's been happening for a while,
yep.
Right? and been focusing on efforts. I think one thing to also recognize is when they're built to where we are now, the lighting technology has changed significantly, and so like it's much more controlled in how you use it, and it's more efficient by every standard out there, from maintenance to performance. And so there should really never, I mean, neighbors want to, but like who cares, like do it for the kids. It's not going to really affect, like it's not going to be up to like midnight, right?
And it's dramatically different than Bearfield.
Yeah.
We're not lighting.
You're not riding the ozone.
Space. It'll be full cutoff LED fixtures. And we would have installed lighting if we had the funding at the time that we developed the play fields. We always plan for it. We install a conduit underneath all of the hardscape, the concrete, and the paved areas for future lighting addition. You know, it's always been planned. It's just we did not have the funding at the time. And so that's, I'm sure, a conversation we'll have coming up in the next few months. And supporting local economic development, we continue to partner with the Chamber. That's really kind of our largest partner here in town, as well as other, you know, airport improvements and other local economic development issues. So again, as we kind of look at these lists, I think, you know, alternative water supply, it's ongoing, it's going to be achievable, it's going to be a long-term. We expect that to continue on. Fire EMS medical staffing shortage, I think we've made large strides, but it will be kind of an ongoing thing. We do think it's achievable, but it will be kind of an ongoing item. Emergency communication system, I think we can mark that complete this year. City shop will be complete. The inability to recruit sufficient staff, I really think we've kind of crested the hill on that. I think we're getting much better responses. I think we've made good strides, both in compensation and benefits. That's always going to be an ongoing thing, I think, especially in certain fields. I think in law enforcement, I think we'll always be. I don't know if that's going to change in the near term, but I don't know that we have the ability to influence that too much. I would almost consider that one to be complete. It was a significant issue at the time that this was initially developed, but I think we're in a much better place on recruitment and hiring staff. And so that one I don't think really likely. I mean, we're going to have an ongoing obligation to make sure that we're paying a fair wage and providing comparable benefits. That's never going to end. And we're always going to want to provide, you know, a great place to work and a good work culture. That's always going to be our obligation. But I don't think this likely needs to live on in future strategic plans. I think we've made good strides.
And I think to that, you know, adding, it's kind of timely with, like, Justin being here earlier, right, and speaking to, like, what they've done and how it does speak to culture, right? It speaks to kind of like the infrastructure that's in place. And so I think that when people, you know, when they're asking about staffing, it's like, yeah, we're short, and we do a lot with a little, right? But like the people that do put in the work, you know, have really good response to it. And it was very cool having Justin in here earlier today.
Inadequate funding to properly maintain city streets, I think that's going to be a long term issue. And I think we're going to see that get harder in the next few years as the state has its financial challenges, which means less funding to some of the discretionary grant programs that we typically kind of rely upon. We also could see with fuel prices going up, reduced driving, reduced fuel tax, reduced highway user fees coming in. So I think we could see a bit of a downturn on funding for transportation in the near future. Deteriorating downtown streetscape, that also will be a long-term, that'll probably be that decade-long project. It is, I think, ongoing. I think it is achievable. And I think it's something we probably should continue to focus on. Preservation, enhanced urban forests, again, I think that really doesn't have a defined end point to it. I think, you know, there was, I think at the time that was promoted, it was we need to hire a city arborist, you know, and have more dedicated staffing just to that function. We're not going to have the resources for that. Dave is going to have to, you know, we're going to do the best we can with the resources we have available, but we're not going to be able to bring on additional staff for that to your focus. It's not going to be, it's going to be EMS over arborist, right? It's just, that's going to have to be the case. So I don't know if it's one that should continue in the future. We have a duty, we have an obligation, we'll continue to run the forestry program, but as far as growing it or expanding it with staff, it would be difficult for us to do.
And I think, sorry, Bill, I just think this is one thing that, like, obviously that, like, is a great thing to want, but like we're the city is in a thing where we're not even getting close to some of the needs, and although I'm not saying trees aren't important, it's like
you're pro tree.
I'm a pro tree guy, and I didn't take an axe to one this weekend, even though I wanted to in my yard. But like at the end of the day, it's like I have a hard time with some of our most basic needs, and it's not that they're not good ideas or they're important. No. We're not saying trees aren't important. We're still gonna monitor it. We still have talent in house, and that goes with a lot of these things that we're talking about.
Can I ask a kind of, I don't know if it's a clarifying question, but in relation to number 8, kind of piggyback off of Drew, to what is the relationship of like the tree commission to like number 8, right? Like in relation to these conversations.
Yeah, I think we can adequately support the tree commission in its current function. They can perform their duties. They can do their educational outreach. They can do the tree planting guide. We can do the certification for arborists in town. I think all those functions can be maintained. I think the goal here was to add more staff that would focus specifically on that.
Right.
And to be able to do things that we can't necessarily police as heavily of, hey, somebody cuts down a public street tree, you need to replace it. We just don't have the resources to be out there all the time chasing that. So I think current functions and all that can remain and be supported. It's just I don't think we, of all the places that to try to expand services, it's probably not going to be the greatest need.
Thanks.
Like affordable housing, again, we kind of talked about that in detail. Multimodal transportation connectivity, this was also one that was a little bit vague. And it's kind of, because we're always going to be continuously, every time there's a subdivision, every time we look at street improvements, we're always looking at adding connectivity. Every time we're looking at the pathway expansion, it was kind of a very broad, aspirational kind of statement, but it didn't have an end point to it. And I think that's the thing that we need to focus on as we look at new initiatives, is something that we can, it's complete, or it's developing a program, or it's adopting a complete street policy that we rephrase them to be achievable, specific, and realistic.
Mm-hmm. Would that also include focusing on a specific region of town?
There's an area of town that there's a highway dividing this side of town to that, and we want to have an underpass, overpass, it's a
critical really specific.
It's very specific. That could be a good one.
I have a question on that. So that one, I particularly think about kind of the state line issue, collaboration with Pullman, Whitman County, airport, crossover. Is there any sort of status update on 10 relative to that?
Yeah, Pullman Transit and Smart Transit are in communication. There were some changes that Smart had to go through for insurance status or something.
Okay.
But the airport is aware. The airport was designed with the intention of the bus lane at the airport being used for buses and as an option for a transfer point.
Okay.
It may take you 2 hours to get where you need to go if your only choice is public transportation to take Moscow Public Transit to the airport and transfer.
Sure.
And get to the far side of town in Pullman, but it's.
Sure.
Impractical,
but strides.
It is a reasonable expansion of service because we're not going to be. It's not a conversation about serving all of the flights. Smart will not be staffing up to be there for the midnight flight, but during their normal hours of operation, when there are flights there, there is an active conversation. Yes, so we're getting there.
And I ask about this because, from a issue-based perspective, there's some ground there. It's just not necessarily happening directly through City of Moscow and its budget,
right?
But how do we, I guess that's maybe a future question for us to think about, talk about, is how do we publicly address that in a way that, to say, hey, there's strides here, things are happening, it's just not through us.
Okay.
But having the goal visible there is helpful because that means every single time there was a question at Smart, the answer was council has made it a priority, right? So even if it's, I think the controllability is a factor as far as, I think controllability is a reasonable evaluation criteria.
And this one was very much focused in town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when this issue was an issue, it was about how do we provide pedestrian bicycle access through in town.
Well, I think this one's the multimodal is very important. I mean, the way we travel today is not going to be the same in 5, 10, 15 years. And
even about 5 years ago.
Think about the amount of electrical bikes, trikes, scooters, and things that people move on today, or automated cars. There's so many things in 5, 10, 15 years that it'll be completely different than what we even think about now. So I think the multimodal aspect of that is just going to keep changing. I think if we have to keep eyeing that in our, our how our roads look different. So I think those are key elements to that one.
I'm going to ask the question that I shouldn't know the answer to, so I apologize. Where are we at with our contract with SPIN?
So it will expire. 1 year expires in July, I think.
Okay.
The initial first year of the scooter program.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
The gateway certification, that's another one. It's kind of, it's a want, not necessarily a need. It's something we'd like to work on, but it's going to be a long-term effort and play field rehabilitation developments and economic development. So. All right, next step. So, as I mentioned, kind of anticipating that we would put out the call for any strategic initiatives in July to the council. We would work on scoring evaluation in August, and then we'd have that workshop on September 14th to kind of review the results of that. If it looks good, then we'll work on putting it into a document for the council to consider probably by the end of the year, in December, would be my estimation.
And you're looking at, again, a four-year, you're looking for strategic initiatives.
It just takes us, if there's something that's...
We
would say on that cycle, we would always have this conversation in the spring. Yeah. If something's come up since the time we adopted it, hey, this new issue, is, I think it's important, we can adapt to that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be pivoting every year and wiping the slate clean every year, because it just takes us, these larger issues just take us time to get done. And having that four-year focus, then we start getting, again, we made it through half the list, a third of the list. A third was kind of like never really achievable, not to a finality, like the check the box. So those probably were not well crafted. and then another third are making good progress, but they're a decade or more longer initiatives, and that's okay, because those should always be on the list. Because if somebody asks you what are the most important things the city's working on, you should be able to hand them that, and not have water fall off, on year five because you got partially done or you got one study completed.
So how does this prioritization list change the city's work in terms of applying for grants, or does it?
It does, and it informs our budget.
Okay.
So really, this informs where are we allocating resources, right? Where, the city shop's going to be an $8.9 million investment. We've identified that as being a significant issue. The radio project was $2.1 million. When we start making these big investments, it better be something that we've identified, that we can articulate why, the importance, and it helps us focus our budget.
And we each get three.
Yep. That's the plan. If you want four, I mean,
but and if you don't have,
and you don't have to get three, but it's to try to keep it to a manageable.
Do they roll over?
Yeah. If it gets too large,
there is no foregone goal setting for you to make. Not like foregone taxes, no foregone.
And we can go through this, and if we need to adjust, it's not, we're not ready. We can flex it.
There's no reason not to include things that we think could be accomplished in a year or two.
No, absolutely. If you
caution us, we're thinking that we're. Because there's a lot of them.
I love those.
You're right. There's a lot of
them. It's like making a list.
That's a sketchy thing that maybe we are we're looking too far, too big.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, budget process. So we're just now at the early stages of the budget process. We've only had a couple meetings, kind of looked at the internal service funds and requests and fleet and IS, just kind of sort of taking a look as they work to develop their allocation models. That's kind of one of the early steps is, those funds that are allocated to different departments, like fleet and IS, we have to set them first so their allocation can flow through to the departments.
And is fleet an enterprise?
Is it what we call internal service fund? Because it's funded by multiple sources, and it's just internally funded. So April 10th, I sent out, I think Lori sent out kind of very detailed budget calendar, but In its essence, by April 10th or so, all budgets and revenue projections are due, so it's a couple weeks from now. We will then have department meetings between April and early May to review budgets. We've got kind of last 2 weeks in May for follow-up meetings and budget balancing, and then early June, first 2 weeks of June, is really budget document prep, getting it all in print form, and then distributed to the council. June 12th is currently our target for distribution. So we'll publish on the website and provide it to the council for review, and then the budget workshop will be on July 7th. That'll start at 8:30. It runs however long we need to. It's a,
Tuesday.
Is that Tuesday?
Okay. Yeah, the fourth is a Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. So we can run however long. Last 3 years, it's started 8:30 and typically wraps up at 1:30, 2 o'clock. But we've got a full day to walk through it, and then the budget hearing will be on August 17th. Just a little bit of preview. So we always kind of start off because payroll is a substantial cost. You know, of the general fund, of the $20 million general fund, 11 is direct payroll in the general fund, 11 million. And then we have another 2.8 million that we transfer to Rec and Culture that's also largely driven by payroll. So you could look at saying 13, 14 million of the general fund is payroll. So it's a big one. It's typically where we start. Our cost of living increases, we typically look at the prior year's consumer price index change, so it was 2.6% for 2025 for the index that we utilize. Health insurance, so the prior plan year, so our plan year runs from July to June. So the year prior to this last July, we had a net loss ratio of 100%, and net means Regent's expense and overhead has already been taken out of it, and then it's essentially what percentage of premiums received did they pay out in claims. And so we were relatively balanced. They paid out 100% of the premium received the claims after they took their expenses. So, I mean, that's not what they would like to be. They'd probably like to see 90% or 85%. For us, we were relatively balanced. Current plan year, we're running about 117, almost 118%. So they're losing more, paying out more claims than they would like to right now. And so that we anticipate that our insurance renewal could be potentially higher, significantly higher than what we had last year. Last year, you may recall, it came out initially with a 12.5% request. We shopped it with two other, our consultants, Gallagher, shopped our plan with two other insurance providers. They all came back at 2.5%. Regents matched that, and then they also gave us, because we've been with Regents for 28 years, they also gave us a little bit of credit below that, so we ended up at about 1.9% increase last year. We're unlikely to be that fortunate this year because we had a couple members with some pretty high medical claims. Based on that, I don't know if we will be able to continue that dependent care increase. We're going to have to kind of monitor that and see what the premium. We should see that in the next 2 weeks. It's be my guess that we typically get it about early second week of April. Typically, we get the renewal rate. We've already had our pre-renewal meeting with Gallagher to talk strategy and plan and what they're seeing in trends. And we'll kind of see here in a couple weeks what Regents comes back with. And then if we can shop it again, we certainly can do that. But we'll have to kind of monitor that to see whether we have any room to address that. On the revenue side, state shared revenue, so that's a portion, 11.5% of sales tax that the state shares cities and counties. You know, we had a big benefit in 20 to 21 because it changed the formula. So, you know, they don't track point of sale. It's not sales that happen here in Moscow that we get reimbursed. We're not like Pullman where we get direct sales collection in your locality. All the revenue goes back to Boise, and then they redistribute it with a formula. It used to have a fairly large assessed valuation base plus population formula, so we got the lowest per capita share because the university being exempt and our tax base being so low, they modified the formula to make it more just capita, population base. And so we saw that big bump between 2021, but it's been rolling off, and we expect it to be flat probably next year. So if not, I don't know that we'll see a decline, but I think it's gonna be flat.
What's the dash line?
Dash line is the trend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's return one. State liquor appropriations, ever since the COVID peak in 2021, whenever he was drinking their sorrows away, it's been on a decline. And so it's been pretty much declining pretty consistently, and then it's kind of leveled off. So we would expect to see lower revenues and probably just continue to see that slight declining trend.
And these both go into general fund.
Yep. Building permit revenues is kind of another source of revenue. And it fluctuates with building activity, has been trending upward slightly, but not by substantial. And you'll have a busy, a big year, and then it'll, so it's kind of, can be relatively noisy. On the property tax front, we have the ability to raise our levy by 3% to pay for inflationary increases to cost of service. That on an $8 million levy will generate $240,000 in additional revenue. New construction, so this is whatever gets built in the prior year, you can apply essentially last year's levy to it and add that to your levy. So you've got 90% of the value since House Bill 389, 90% of the value you can apply your levy to, and then you can add that to your levy so you have the funding to serve the new development. That ranges between typically $60,000 to $100,000 of new revenue per year, and then for the last 4 years, we've been bringing in foregone revenue that added 1%. So if we had that available on an $8 million levy, that bring another $80,000 revenue, there's only $15,000 foregone remaining. So if the council chooses to bring that into the budget this year, that would just add $15,000, and then our foregone balance will be gone. And then we'll just be back to 3% and new construction. So that would add somewhere between $315,000 and $355,000 in revenue for the next fiscal year. If you look on the payroll side, you assume a 2.6 cost of living, 3% on performance. So we do have a pay for performance, so we don't have set steps. Typically for any compensation program, there's two components. There's any kind of cost of living adjustment, and then there's steps, typically. Our steps are performance. It's based on your evaluation, and so we budget, traditionally we've budgeted 4%. We've been trimming that down a little bit and budgeting 3%.
Is that annual?
Annual. Until you get to the top of your range, and then you're just back to cost of living at that point. PD is different on step and grades. The police, the first step's 12%, and then it's 7% steps from there. Mm-hmm. But it's only a 5-step, and then you're topped out, and then you're just to cost of living. That's for patrol, for like sergeants. Corporals is 3% for 3 years, and then you're topped out. And same thing for forensic detectives. But for general, all other employees other than step and grade sworn law enforcement, if you assume the 3% performance increase, and I'm just going to say medical insurance is 8%, it just as an assumption. It could be higher, but I'm going to guess we're going to be somewhere in that range. General fund payroll increase just from those three elements would be $522,000, and then rec and culture, which is funded by general fund 90%, would be $62,000. So you've got just under $600,000 of payroll increase. There are certain portions of the general fund that are allocated out to other departments, so it's legal and finance, HR. So the general fund departments that provide services to the enterprise funds, the enterprise funds can pay for those services, so we can recapture about 30% of general fund payroll in that model. So if you were to take that out, essentially we'd be at about a $4,000 increase if we saw, if we budgeted 2.6% COLA, 3% of performance, and we saw our medical insurance went up 8%. That's essentially kind of the net impact to the general fund and rec and culture, which are just the general fund supported operations. So with $315,000 to $355,000 of new revenue. So close. But that assumes no increase for, in every software application is going up 5, 6, 7, 8% per year. Commodity prices are going to go up. Certainly fuel is going to go up next time we purchase. We're going to see inflation across all other non-personnel related expenses. So before we even look at those, we're $50,000 to $80,000 in the hole. So we'll have to make some decisions. We also received notice here about 2 weeks ago. So the Attorney General's office has been funding one of our forensic detectives in the police department for them to participate on the
Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And so Lawrence Mallory, who's one of our forensics detectives and really the highest producing forensic detective in the state, works on a lot of federal cases and cases outside of our jurisdiction, but his position in the, and some of ours, but his position has been funded by the AG's office. They want to reposition that position up to Coeur d'Alene.
And I am asking some questions.
So when you take in the fully benefited cost of the position, so salary plus benefits budgeted this fiscal year at $138,000, we'll lose that revenue effective May of this year. They're going to stop funding that position.
Are we going to retain the position?
Yeah, well, that's been the question to Anthony, because we're going to have to give up a patrol position in order to retain that position, because we don't have, as you just saw our financial situation, we don't have funding to add, to pick that position up. Additionally, with the closure of the jail, transports to Lewiston are costing generally between $6,000 and $7,000 a month. We've had a few that were like, we had 1 month was $2,500, some have been bid $5,000, but I'd say around $6,000 has been kind of the average cost of transports right now. So we are paying overtime to have an officer on call to call in to transport, and then when they get called in, they're getting paid overtime to come in to transport that. We've had an officer come transport four people in one night.
Have they been okay with that? It's kind of mandatory.
At this point,
I think
right now, early stages, I think morale is okay because it's been this opportunity to earn income. I think long term it will become a problem, but I think in the early 6 months of it, it's been received okay. But that's going to be additional drag on us that we have to be aware of. So all this is really saying we anticipate a tight FY27 fiscal year because we also are looking at the state economy and kind of where that's heading. And then there's a little conflict going on. And we don't know what impact that's going to have long term, or how long that's going to be in place, and what impact that will have on inflation. It will affect a lot of other things. So we do want to position ourselves to be a little bit conservative, to be aware. We've had seven positions that we've held vacant since 2023. We'll continue to keep those positions vacant. We won't have funding for. I mean, those represent another $600,000 or so, maybe, with benefits. So there's no funding to bring those positions back. And departments have directed to keep budgets. We cut discretionary spending, which ends up being a pretty small piece. It's training, it's department supplies, it's non-labor related expenses. And departments that they were required to cut 20% here a couple years ago. I told them that's our new baseline. We've got to hold that tight, and so that will be tight as well. So under that rosy picture, it was an opportunity to ask and to have the council let me know if there's anything specific you'd like us to take a look at as we begin to formulate it. Again, we do view this as being a bare bones maintenance. We do anticipate, depending upon health insurance premium renewals, whether we can do the 2.6 cost of living, whether we have to dial that down. There will be some things we will have to evaluate, but anything else is going to be cutting programs, activities, and I think given where we are right now, we'll be able to get it to balance, but we won't have funding really to bring. So PD will be down three patrol officers unfunded rather than two, with the ICAC position being pulled. But that's kind of where we are. So we won't have a lot of discretionary for programs, activities, things. I know because that's been kind of the conversation about the housing authority and house staff and how to fund that. It's just like this is our budget, right? This is what we're facing, and so we'll have to be careful about what we commit to and what we can take on.
As far as the staff, so that means for the police specifically, we keep the forensic scientists. That means a current staff member will be leaving.
No. We have unfilled positions. Yeah.
Okay.
We're typically always carrying 2 to 4 vacant patrol positions. And so it just means, they one less they can fill.
And then I don't know you guys. I get a lot of people ask me about the budget and questions and specific items. When is an appropriate time, or is there an appropriate time to have discussions or have information? As we go through the budget process, what's the process or platform to maybe have those discussions? Or bring some of those concerns that we hear from the public or get those answers
about.
You can send those to me anytime.
Okay.
As they come up, is fine.
If you've got questions, we published a citizen's budget guide. So, you know, certainly point people resources exist. You've got citizen's budget guide that explains the budget. It explains the fact that we budget our fund balances, which is what makes our budget look a little bit larger than it really is on the operations side. The budget is pretty detailed, but if you have any specific questions, always feel free to send them to me or ask Sarah. We're happy to give you answers if there's specific questions.
Okay. And that budget hearing on July 7th is open to the public, and that's our opportunity. I know that we're pretty far in the process.
So the workshop on the 7th is open.
Right.
It's generally not an opportunity for public.
Correct.
It's a conversation for us to kind of walk through it. The hearing on, where was 17th?
August.
That is the formal
comment. Yeah, and so like when people ask me about the budget, I let them know about the workshop in July. You know, just because that's also our opportunity. Because every department head will come and they'll present their budget to us, literally line by line, like exactly line by line. And
should we go into your line by line with a highlighter, like questions? I mean,
for sure.
That's what. Kind of,
mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, so this is kind of the larger context of the budget is that we've got to balance ongoing operations and capital needs like road maintenance. And in 23, when the Bradbury suit down in Lewiston ended up removing funding that we were, you know, the utility funds were contributing to the street fund to mitigate their impact upon the roadways. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court deemed that as a legal action, so we had to cease that. We also ceased collecting the street light fee that was, you know, we're now paying another $300,000 out of the general fund to pay for street light. Well, it's out of street fund, but effectively, the street fund used to be able to put $700,000 away for capital projects, larger street improvement projects. With that decision, and what we had to adjust, that went away. So general fund now has to make up that difference for those larger street projects. So I have to try to preserve $1 million to $1.4 million every year to go to, you know, those longer term capital projects to fund road maintenance that the street fund can no longer now carry. And so we have reasonable capital accumulations for those large projects, but we have to. If we have no money to do that, we will be in a world of hurt. So we have reasonable accumulations for the utilities, which always are taking up for large projects. On the general fund side, we've got $10-11 million for these larger parks, or there's playfields that somebody wants, you know, that we want to develop down West Blue River Drive, or there's road improvements we need to make. And so, you know, we have reasonable accumulations for the one-time expenses, but what I'm always focusing on every year was the ongoing revenue, what's the ongoing operational expenses. And you know, that's essentially what we get for new revenue based on trying to maintain staff, trying to provide cost of living increases, trying to provide the benefits. It's balancing that ongoing revenue and those ongoing expenses and not getting into the trap of paying ongoing revenues from reserves like Pullman did. And then you find yourself in a world of hurt. Right? So we're always making sure that we're tracking. We're never using one-time revenues for ongoing expenses or personnel because those are perpetual expenses. And yes, every year we'll have $200,000 or $300,000 that we won't spend because we never across a $20 million general fund, we're never expending 100%, and so those go into those capital accumulations for the larger projects, but we're balancing ongoing to ongoing for revenues and expenses. That's where we're really tight.
Bill, can you, and I'm sure you mentioned all this back during orientation, but for all of us, but can you remind how Coeur d'Alene does their budget, because you mentioned it briefly just a moment ago, that we're unique in how we do it comparatively. And I know Coeur d'Alene is a very different municipality.
The biggest thing is, so we put all of our fund balances in our budget, and they show up as a revenue as a beginning fund balance, and they show up as an expense as an ending fund balance. And so there's about $54 million, or maybe closer to $58 million, that sits in the budget that's not planned to be expended that year. It's accumulations for future projects. And in theory, we only have to appropriate what we're going to spend that year. And so your fund balances don't show up in your budget unless you choose to do what we do. It'll show up in your annual audit. But a lot of people don't go through and read the audit. They look at the budget. Sure. And so those fund balances, all of your assets and liabilities show up in the audit. But we have budgeted our fund balances and we put it in the budget. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other things that Coeur d'Alene does, that like Parks is in the general fund, where Parks for Us is in Rec and Culture Fund, so then we have to transfer from the general fund to that fund, and that revenue then gets duplicated in the transfer as we receive it in the revenue, and then it's transferred to another department, and so that gets duplicated. The 2.8 million gets multiplied twice. When if it was in the general fund and we didn't have the transfer, you wouldn't duplicate that expense. Sure. So there are a few of those things, like streets, and streets are not in a, for us, streets is in what we call special revenue fund. Mm-hmm. It's its own fund. In Coeur d'Alene, they don't. It's in the general fund. Same thing with parks. So there's a few things on the transfer side, and then they don't put their fund balances in their budget. They just appropriate what they're spending that year. And we felt that putting our fund balances in the budget was adding to transparency, but it adds confusion because yours is big. Well, no, their general fund's twice our general fund. Sure. Lewiston's tax revenue is over three times our tax revenue with their severe population. So it does confuse things, but the biggest piece is our fund balances in the budget. That inflates it to the, takes it from, closer to 80 or 90 million total to 130.
Is it fair, the analogy that I just thought of, Bill, was like when you're going to ask for a loan, a mortgage credit, it's the equivalent of places that only show their income versus us having a pocket full of assets, assets that are spoken for, but talking about we are showing a holistic view of what money the city currently has in our possession and what it is spoken for. It's a cleaner through line for the dollar in and where the dollar gets expended, and it may take 5 years from the dollar coming in, sitting in a general fund before it gets expended. But not to say that Coeur d'Alene is not being open when they're coming to ask for a house loan, but I think it's a matter of saying their income may be high enough that they could have they can get what they need by just saying this is what my annual income is, and that's fine.
And we're the anomaly. It's not Coeur d'Alene. We're the anomaly of actually putting fund balances in the budget. That's not very common. I'm not sure I've seen another city that actually puts their fund balances in. And I've argued a little bit with Sarah about, maybe we should, if it adds confusion, maybe we should take it out. If it didn't do what we intended to, mm-hmm. which was help provide transparency, but it makes it look like somehow
we have more,
then maybe it would be best just to appropriate what we're spending. But she argues against it because she really thinks transparency and that visibility is super important. And I do too, but it does get tiring to have to ask the question all the time of why that is. But it's a strong focus on making sure that we are looking at ongoing, and not just ongoing this year, but ongoing expenses this 5 years from now, and making sure that we're never looking at one-time revenues or fund balances to come back in to fund ongoing operations, because you will find yourself in the world of hurt real quick. So we have to make those hard decisions, not try to defer those hard decisions. Canny Idols went bankrupt because mm-hmm. they were spending beyond their means. And so it's better to have that hard conversation. And since 2020, we've been putting capital, before 2020, capital funding was just whatever was left over from the prior year. We began in 2021 of saying, here's ongoing operations, larger personnel, here's capital needs, and putting it on the table at the same time, and not just saying, ignoring the capital side, and just saying, we're going to fund it with whatever we end up not spending. That $300,000 or $400,000 from the prior year is all we're going to get. Can't do that. And so it's not fun, but it's what we have to do.
A related thing, when I look at, and tell me if I'm probably wrong, but if I look at what the city spends that they have to spend and not looking at accumulating money for capital projects or anything else, it looks like we have to have around $60 million. And
yeah, I've never looked at
that. That's what I look at, because I always want to see that we have a revenue stream that allows us to spend what we have to if for some reason we suddenly couldn't.
What do you mean by have to? What fits in the have to bucket in your mind?
The enterprise funds are all kind of have to, mm-hmm. except what they're accumulating towards capital projects. And then, the way I look at it is what we actually pay out, what the checks we send out, and what we pay, which includes, of course, some previously funded capital initiatives that we're now paying for. Mm-hmm. But it stays pretty consistent, grows with inflation over the last 10 years, but that's what I'm throwing out. It looks like we have to see revenue
to maintain the services that we are promising of $60 million or so. And to me, that's the budget. That's the bare bones budget. So when I look at bare bones budget, that's, and so I would like to have that corrected because I didn't do as exhaustive a work as Sarah would do to tell us that. But it's one of those things that's important to me to know.
I think it's one of those things you can, the general fund, it's easier for me to look at it in the context of general fund versus enterprise funds, because the general fund is a $20 million fund. That funds all, you know, essential public safety services, and it includes the capital transfer, and includes the transfer to fund rec and culture beyond what they can collect in fees. The enterprise funds have the freedom to be able to adjust rates to meet operational and capital needs, and we do these independent third-party assessments to come up with those rates, so they can kind of run on their own, because they're not revenue-restricted per se, because they can adjust rates to meet the revenue needs. The general fund is revenue-restricted because our only lever is the 3% on property taxes, which adds that $240,000, and so when you're looking at that $14 million in payroll in the general fund and you have no other levers to generate income, there's no rates to adjust, your capped on taxes, property taxes, you state your revenue, you're kind of stuck with what we get there. That's where you just, you know, that's where you're really revenue constrained. And so $20 million in the general fund will fund a reasonable, right? Well, I mean, that's missing the two police officers, the other four positions that should be in there that we don't have, and it's a capital transfer this year of 1.2, which is okay, but would be better to be, you know, collectively between street and general fund, we're closer to 1.4 to 1.8 annually to capital, so it's a $400,000 reduction from where we would be able to jointly do, so it's not where we haven't been able to fully make up what the street fund lost, but we're doing okay, and we're getting a lot of grants. that's great, and we're having to really work hard for those. But
as you pointed out, that climate for these grants and matching funds may require higher matching funds than we're accustomed to, or some of them will, those granting sources are going to potentially dry out altogether.
So, I don't want this to be a downer, but if there's something that you really would like us to focus on as we work on developing the budget, I'd love to hear it. You don't have to tell me today. You can tell me later. But I just wanted to, this is the exercise we go through every year. It's not new. It's not getting any better, but it's not new. And what it is, just as we think about these strategic initiatives and outside demands to support additional services, we have to be really mindful of what our limitations are.
Can I ask a question? I think it happens in some states, and I was unsure on Idaho law, if we can base capital costs that are related to EMS and police on fees, that would be, again, part of the city bill.
It's taxing district.
You could do impact fees on new development, and you can include things like fire apparatus on impact fees to be levied on new development to pay the proportionate share. We've looked at impact fees in the past. We've done impact fee studies. Prior councils have declined to implement them, and one of the challenges has been growth has been relatively slow. If you can't spend it within 10 years, you pretty much have to return it. And so you kind of hit yourself to make up for whatever you aren't able to collect the impact fees that you have to contribute to get that project done, or you potentially lose those funds. And it's been
it's been
difficult. The high growth cities, it makes more sense.
Typically, if you see, three point something, that's when you want to introduce it.
As far as percent growth?
Yeah. Percent growth.
And we've been less than 1%, maybe 1.2%. So it's just been so slow.
Well, the other part of that question is, would that make a significant impact on our inability to fund the police force the way we'd like to, since those funds are generally, in the place I looked at, lended to equipment and
capital
would that really even make a difference?
It doesn't go to your operating expenses, but it helps some of those capital needs.
Yeah.
A new fire station, a new fire apparatus. And
We start to grow, I think, at a rate that we can.
I also don't want us to grow at a rate.
I agree.
Okay, that's all I had for that rosy forecast. But I just, you know.
I mean, to speak on like the rosiness of that, right? And this is, and it's, and it took me a couple of years to kind of understand a little bit. Well, it took me a couple of years to understand that, like, when we have all of this on our plate, and again, those tough decisions that must be made, where it's like, and sometimes, like, the example that comes up is like, okay, like, if we're missing something here, where are we going to take it from elsewhere, right? And like, a really good example, and this is not, I want to be very clear here, I'm not advocating for this, but this is where those hard conversations come about. It's like, okay, well, if, like, we're really in a pinch or we really want X to be funded, well, let's just get rid of the farmer's market, right? And that, and I'm saying I don't want to do that, right? But I'm saying, like, that's part of the hard conversation, right? Where it's like, what do we cut when we're in such a tight spot, right? And that gets really challenging.
That's really tough. I mean, I had to make a list one night of when I thought we were going to be in that better situation. The other thing that's, I think, also hard that gets conflated is a certain capital project expense. It doesn't go against our operating every year. And so like, oh, you're spending money to do this road or to this park improvement or whatever the project might be, what we've been accumulating for those, it's not going to affect.
And we're generally accumulating matching funds for a lot of those too.
And we're not going to flow those monies back into the general fund because then, again, we're funding ongoing expenses with one-time revenues. Mm-hmm. And so if you didn't do Project A, maybe you could not raise property taxes for that $240,000 this year. Well, that's a Ponzi scheme because we will deplete those revenues at some point in time, and then we will find ourselves in a huge hole. So it's you know, yes, we make one-time capital expenses from funds. We've accumulated one-time funds. We've accumulated for one-time expenditures, but we can't fund operations with those, ongoing personnel expenses with those funds. If you do, you end up where Pullman is, and now all of a sudden they're in a financial crisis because they hope the economy is going to turn around and sales tax would rebound, so they were borrowing one-time money to pay for ongoing expenses and deferring the hard decisions, and then when it doesn't turn around, or it gets worse, now they're making very hard decisions.
So is there a mechanism where you can declare an emergency and take your capital improvement funds and move them?
It can move that way.
Okay.
There's nothing that precludes taking, you know, capital accumulations and flowing them into the general fund. But if you want to see Sarah's, you know, hair stand and suggest that, because that's a recipe that you're borrowing to pay ongoing debt,
right?
You know, that isn't going to go away unless it's for something that has a short term life to it. You just never want to do that. So the idea that you can be tight as we are and fund a capital expenditure, that can go to because we've accumulated that and it doesn't add to our ongoing expenses, but it's one that also can be hard to rectify.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we can do with investments?
Investments have been great, but investments are also something that the benefit of the investment earnings, and we will be on track to earn $2 million in interest earnings this year, but it inures back to the capital funds. We cannot, because rates can drop precipitously. And so we don't count on interest earnings to fund ongoing operations.
And we're funding bonds, but for other cities, what's our primary investment?
So it's a mix. It's a lot of U.S. securities, treasuries, and a few high-grade corporate bonds. Yeah. And so it's mostly 80% U.S.-backed investment vehicles. It's all fixed income assets. And we have 58 million invested, and we have purposely pushed maturity out because you got limitation
on
how far. 5 years. 5 years is our maximum
revival
law.
So that would just make me think. So if we did even think of borrowing against some of our capital accumulations, then we're also losing that revenue.
If we borrow from, let's say, if you were to borrow from the sanitation fund to fund a park project, we have to pay the sanitation fund that same prevailing rate.
Yeah.
And so essentially we're going to pay that cost.
Yep.
Because we have to make that fund whole. We have to pay the market rate, we have to look at the LGIP. We have pushed a lot of our stuff into fixed assets. We tried to push maturity out. I think we're sitting about 2.5 years average maturity right now because we're trying to capture before the rate cuts hit. Now, the war
or conflict occurred. We don't know what that's going to mean because the Fed was going to be probably on track with a new head of the Fed appointed to start pushing more rate cuts. So we're trying to lock in that 4.5% that was available. So in the last 4 months, we've had our investors try to push that maturity out. So if we rolled on rates,
that doesn't help us pay our people.
No.
It helps pay for projects.
And we're really limited on what investment vehicles we can use in either. And the duration. So. So interest rates are great. The greatest benefit is coming back to the capital funds, so it's adding to the capital accumulation for their project, which is great. That means it's offsetting rate revenue from ratepayers, but we don't operate off that because that could dry up quickly.
The other thing that I've noticed with that, even though we say we're increasing the accumulation in this specific capital project, as we saw in today's earlier presentation, that isn't keeping up with the potential cost increases of construction. And sometimes I wonder about that if we're doing the wise thing, because this money that we collect maybe 10 years in advance and we even accumulate the interest on it as an investment is not keeping up with the cost of that project 10 years from now.
And so we have an annual inflation escalator in our CIP, but it's been low. And it's been so we've been carrying 3% annual escalator. For construction, it's leveling off, but we probably should have been carrying 8 to 10. Mm-hmm. But we were afraid to do that.
Sure.
And the reality is, you put all these projects in your CIP, you never are truly able to execute as many as you'd like to in every year. So they tend to get pushed out, and that kind of helps offset that inflation escalation.
Because you also need engineers to review.
Yeah, so you have that cushion because we just have a limited pipeline of how many projects we can manage with our staff. And so that it tends to limit how much we can kind of charge you and put out. And so that kind of that equalizes out that inflation adjustment a little bit. But we're going to have to have our...
Yeah, I have quite a concern about that because we're underfunding our future capital projects, it looks like to me. We're saying, here's what... And we're telling the public, in 5 years we hope to do this, and 10 years that. And I look at the capital accumulation, and even if we're throwing all the investment income in that, we're not actually funding.
There's a lot of hopeful grants in
there. Yeah. But I also think if you look at the construction cost that we estimate, I mean, we budgeted, 2.2 million for that project, if you have 1.2. So there is some fluctuation. I mean, if we're talking about 2%, that's not even the contingency. I mean, the order of magnitude of the project. So I don't think we're...
And that's a really good point. I mean, like, anytime I forecast for construction, I recognize not everyone in the city understands construction. Which I don't expect them to, right? But like, you never give a cost estimate that is low, right? You always try to go in at a healthy rate, and then as we saw today, we came in.
Oh, sweet!
That's just construction.
Yeah.
And because there's no like that's just a rule of thumb and taught in any school, any person that hasn't even gone to school. If it's you have your contractor, that's just been the foreman for ages doing concrete, that's just a well-baked-in thing that you over-plan and you hope as you develop it and you go out that it comes under a period. Yeah. And that could be any project. And so that's why you have grants. But if we don't make a plan, and we're saying we hope that this can occur, but we can only, underneath our city boundary, our border, we can only really control whatever happens on a state federal level, that impacts us like huge. And so we have to pivot towards what we're working in, and sometimes that's really well and sometimes it's really tight. And that's why when we get these kind of wild suggestions of how the city should be managed, it's like, well, yeah, like, but like we just had a pretty good overview.
We've got a 10-year forecast in our CIP.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have a pretty reasonable handle on 2 years, but it helps us with the prioritization because right. People want to know, when is my street going to get done? Yep. Well, you're 7 years from now. And why? Well, this other one's worse condition, has higher risk volumes, there's security, more rapid.
What is that pickleball court going
to
build?
Yeah. And people don't understand, as we look at the revenue coming in for general fund projects, how tight we are. But we do a really good job, I think, in delivering good services. That it's hard for people to understand that we are quite so tight.
And I do think, and we should wrap up, I'm sure. But one thing is I've learned in my 3 years of being on council, and I like kind of understood this, but seeing it actually in action, like I love that the city has a full-time grant writer on the staff. Like I think that and for us to be creative in that financial way, like I am continually impressed by what Elise does and what grants she's able to secure, and just like how that is. Again, you can't bank on it, right? Like, you can't put all your eggs in that basket. But it's actually awesome. And I like, and I will talk with community members about how I think that it's a really wise thing that the city does.
What's a wise investment?
Yeah,
it's the same way I talk to others. And you know, when they're like, "Well, how are you guys going to put these sidewalks in?" Like, we're not. It's called a grant. And so it's like, it's yeah, we're, yeah. Trust me. Like, I wish we could do everything, but we have to wait for grants. So.
Well, thank you for your attention.
Bill, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Drew.
Yeah, it's good. We got three more, so it was productive, and we'll go to that point.
Do you know what you want to have happen with the table, Bill?
Honestly, we got a meeting here this morning. Yeah.